Tomorrow, the Supreme Court will hear oral arguments in a case that challenges same-sex marriage bans in four states, Ohio, Michigan, Kentucky, and Tennessee. But it's widely thought the court's decision will decide the future of same-sex marriages in all states. Richard Tsakarides has our primer. He's an attorney and longtime gay rights advocate. He was also a White House special assistant and senior advisor to President Bill Clinton. And Richard, the court has said there are very specific questions here.
Well, the court, in a rather unusual procedure, has actually framed two very specific questions. The first one is, does the 14th Amendment require a state to license a marriage between two people of the same sex? And the second question is it required that states recognize the same-sex marriages validly performed in other states? We've seen over the last couple of years a progression here. Listeners will remember that 2 years ago, the Supreme Court handed down a rather important decision in the Windsor case, where the court struck down head-on the Federal Defense of Marriage Act. The Defense of Marriage Act said that the federal government could not recognize same-sex marriages performed right. by states where they were legal. So they 2 years ago, they addressed that issue in rather sweeping terms, striking it down and really saying that it offended the dignity of gay Americans who were entitled to equal rights. But they did not reach the question of whether all states needed to allow gay and lesbian couples to marry the person they love.
Right. The court, in striking down the law, said that couples can have things like federal benefits, but only in states that recognize their marriage as legal.
That's correct. And so this is really what we're seeing here unfold Tuesday, and then in the decision, which we expect in June, is the court's progression over time on the issue of gay rights. And what we're very much hoping for is a decision from the court which settles once and for all the issue of whether every state needs to allow gays and lesbians to marry. And the language in the Windsor case 2 years ago was so clear and so sweeping, it seems like the court, you know, has sort of shown it a lot of its cards. But yet, you know, there's always a lot of suspense. The arguments are going to be on Tuesday. And then a decision in June, we'll have to wait and see what the court rules.
Well, and we'll get to what the arguments might be, but you write that there was a selection process for the lawyers who'd make those arguments, kind of a moot-off. It's kind of like a sing-off. I want to hear who won, but is that unusual to have people audition to be the lawyers?
Well, it's very unusual, and the expression moot-off is almost never heard of and never done. But this is four cases that have been combined, so there are four sets of lawyers. And that, combined with the fact that everybody expects that this decision will be a very big deal for gays and lesbians and for the history of gay rights. So there were a lot of lawyers who wanted to be the main advocates on behalf of these plaintiffs. And they, in fact, could not agree. There was a long simmering disagreement between the lawyers for the different parties who would get to argue the case. And so the Supreme Court kind of informally, I think, told them that they had to come up with one person. And they essentially all went off into a room together and had different lawyers audition for the role of who would be the chief lawyer. And Mary Bonatto from Massachusetts, who actually argued the first successful gay marriage case before the Massachusetts Supreme Court, came out the winner.
And do we understand no major law firms, you know, stepped up to want to argue in favor of the bans?
Yes. 2 years ago, a number of the lawyers who argued against gay rights got into some difficulty, both with their firms and in the press. And I think this year, none of the major law firms wanted to step up. Now, it's a little unusual, right? Because in the history of the country, first of all, lawyers, I think, by nature think that they're required to represent people with unpopular views, right? It's in the nature of the legal business. And in fact, some of the greatest arguments of all time have included great lawyers on the wrong side of history, right? But in this case, they couldn't do it. And they got a former Michigan Solicitor General and a Tennessee Associate Solicitor General to argue against the gay rights plaintiffs in this case. But they are not people we've ever heard of.
Well, then let's let people hear of them at least once. John Birch and Joseph Whalen, who will be arguing for the ban. Now, some people say the arguments are going to be a tug of war between the constitutional right to equal protection and states' rights. Your thoughts?
Well, I wouldn't say that exactly. I think that what we will hear from the plaintiffs is, first of all, that the Equal Protection Clause of the Constitution requires that all Americans, including gay Americans, be treated equally, and that if a state is going to license marriage, it has to license marriage for everybody. And then the second argument is that the institution of marriage is such a fundamental institution that infringing upon it infringes upon the liberty protected from the Due Process Clause. But in layperson's terms, it's essentially two arguments, one based upon the Equal Protection Clause of the Constitution and one based upon the Due Process Clause in the Constitution. But essentially what the argument will be is that if states are going to be in the marriage business, they have to be in the marriage business for everybody. Now, on the other side, they kind of say, well, tradition, because of tradition, we are allowed to treat people differently.
But you don't think that anyone will argue states' right or religious preference?
I think there may be some arguments on the other side that people's religious liberties are offended. And people may say that, well, we ought to let this issue develop a little bit more, that a certain state can go one way and another state can go another way, and that would be okay. But that is more of a political argument than an argument based in the constitutional law, which this is really about. You know, this has progressed in the political sphere in increments, right? And so President Obama, who is now a strong supporter of marriage equality and who, in fact, will send his Solicitor General, Donald Verrilli, to argue alongside the gay marriage plaintiffs in this case. 2 years ago, when the previous cases were before the court, he had a much more nuanced argument, which was that you could see a situation where certain states were marriage equality states and certain states were not, and that that would be constitutionally acceptable. The government no longer takes that position, and that in itself was a fairly significant shift.
So again, the expectation is that whatever the court says, it will apply to all states?
Right. And there was a case before the court 2 years ago, the also famous Proposition 8 case, where the lawyers Ted Olson and David Boies tried to get the court to issue a ruling that recognized the right to marry, a federal right to marry based upon the Constitution. But because there were a lot of procedural issues involved in that, the court was able to sidestep it and to rule in favor of same-sex marriage in California, but the ruling was not applicable outside California this time, both because the lawyers for the gay rights plaintiffs have set it up this way and because the court seems more ready for it. That issue is presented, you know, head on, so that the answer is either going to be yes or no. So we really expect a momentous decision either way. It could be very close. But because there were 5 votes for Edie Windsor in her effort to strike down the Defense of Marriage Act 2 years ago, it seems like it is very hard to construct a legally defensible argument whereby the Defense of Marriage Act would be unconstitutional, but laws which prohibit same-sex marriage themselves are not unconstitutional.
You know, the court is supposed to live in something of a bubble and not be affected by trends and public opinion. But do you think that's possible in this case? We're watching what happened when states tried to legalize not serving gay couples, for instance, Arkansas, Indiana. The blowback was unbelievable. Do you think the court is watching that?
I think the court is watching that very much. And I actually think that while the court would like the public to believe that they live in a bubble and that they only look and interpret the law, I think that it's cases like this which disprove that theory right on the nose. I mean, for sure, when the court is asked to rule on a social and political issue, you know, they're people too, and they can't help but observe and have their eye on what's happening in the rest of the country and how their opinion will be received.
Wait a minute. Members of the Supreme Court are people?
They are people too. They're individuals just like you and me. They go to dinner with friends. They have gay and lesbian friends. They do everything that other people do.
Richard Sakharidis, you can find a link to Richard's New Yorker article, The Coming Gay Marriage Ruling, at hereandnow.org. Richard, thank you.
Thank you very much, Robin. It's been a pleasure to be with you.
So as Richard reminded us, President Obama changed his mind on same-sex marriages. Have you? Or how about, would you like to see a unanimous decision? Would that mean more to you in settling this question? Your thoughts as the court takes up state bans on gay marriage tomorrow are welcome at hereandnow.org.